Get up, BDL. It's time for the Can-Am Super Show, brought to you by Mike, everyone's favorite Canadian, and yours truly. I'm Scotty, the Undisputed Commissioner of Fantasy Baseball. Coming up on today's show, we're hoping we still remember how to do this. We know it's been a minute since we brought you some BDL content, but we're ready to hit the ground running for the 2025 relaunch of the Super Show. And just a quick little note about that while we're on that topic. For the past few years, Mike and I have used a split brand concept here for our podcasts, with the BDL Baseball's Inside Podcast serving as the home for our BDL exclusive content, and the Can-Am Super Show serving as the vehicle for kind of a wider scope of topics. If we want to talk about, you know, wrestling or retro video gaming or something else going on. So what we've decided to do is actually to consolidate that branding. So everything you see going forward from now on will be under the Can-Am Super Show banner. But the old Inside Pods will live under that banner when everything is merged together. So you'll see everything in that one straight feed at some point here over the next few weeks. We'll get that tidied up. So, but from now going forward, you can expect to see everything under the Can-Am banner. So just make sure and look for that in your feed if you subscribe on Spotify or your app of choice there. But for today's show, what we're going to do is start, I think, with a glance at the 2024 BDL season's finale. Before we chat a little bit about the biggest news items of the offseason so far, you know, the league is always changing, and sometimes what's old is new again. And we'll talk a little bit about that too. But great year on the way for the entire Black Diamond League as the BDL prepares to kick off its 21st season here on planet Earth. So we'll see who's got the stuff to knock off the new two-time champs once we get rolling here in 2025. So the Super Show is proudly hosted on Captivate, our podcast home on the web. To catch each and every episode of the podcast, make sure you subscribe to our feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Downcast, or wherever you decide to listen to your podcasts. If you want to interact with the show, the easiest way to do that is to give us a shout on X, formerly Twitter, at Can-Am Super Show. We're very active every single day on X, sometimes to our own detriment, and we would love to hear from you.
Mike making friends around the world, baby.
Just shut up, Mike. Thanks for checking out the pod today, guys. You are listening to the BDO Podcast Network, and here comes the Super Show. Hello again, all you fantasy baseball maniacs, especially those who call the Black Diamond League home. Thanks so much for making the Can-Am Super Show part of your day. Can-Am Connection is back again to bring you the best, actually the only, BDL news on the planet. Mike, my friend, my house has been locked in a cube of ice for 2 weeks. And the high early next week looks to be around 12 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is, Celsius, and up in northern Montana. But I hope you're staying warmer than I am right now.
This is what happens when your president threatens tariffs on us. We throw horrible weather at your country.
is this a preview of things to come?
It really is. It really is. We have ways of doing things to your country that you don't understand until they happen. No,
don't say that.
Yeah, things are okay. The world's gone bloody nuts. But outside of that, things are okay on my end. As you noted in the intro, you know, we've been very active on Twitter. When I say we, I mainly mean me. And I have come to realize that your country has lost its damn mind. I thought I knew it before, but these past few months have given me the confirmation that I was looking for. And I found a way to piss off B-level celebrities in your country over the last few months in ways I didn't think were possible. In this particular case, former ESPN legend Keith Olbermann hates me, apparently. Not just hates me, but thinks I'm a Nazi.
Keep him out of here.
And why does he think I'm a Nazi, Scotty? Because I dare to say that half of your country were not Nazis. And that alone, apparently, makes me a Nazi. So, we're living in a very interesting time, are we not?
Well, you know, the one thing we don't do and we'll never do on this show is politics. So we won't delve too deeply into that. No, but
probably a wise idea.
But just in short, in agreeance with you, yes, we are in bizarre times. No mm-hmm. matter your worldly persuasion or yep. your nationality or where you call home or any of those things, it's something else.
Everyone has lost their damn mind. That's all it is. But I don't get it. But let's talk baseball and other fun stuff, because I don't want to go on a political tirade, which I'm more than capable of having. So yeah, let's do the topic to fun stuff.
Well, just do your best not to get us banned from Elon's platform there.
You know what? I'm pretty close, I think. I'm really pushing pushing the line a little bit. I may have to open up in a kind of blue sky.
That's going to say our blue sky. Here we come.
Our profile. Because apparently everybody hates me. That's the funny thing. People on the right think I'm a lunatic because I'm sane. And people on the left think I'm a lunatic because I'm sane. So it's kind of funny how that works. No.
All that means is that you are appropriately moderate.
I guess. That just pisses off everybody, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Trump isn't Hitler. Oh, that means you're a Nazi. It's like, all right. Okay, I guess. No, I'm just reading a history book. It's like, no, he's an asshole. He's not Hitler. There's a not so subtle difference here. It's like we've lived through this guy. I don't like him either, but no, he's not Adolf. And then you guys elect this imbecile again, and the first words out of his mouth are like, "We're gonna invade Canada." It's like, oh god, all right. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe it's like, oh, what do we do? Greenland, here we come. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, I tried to defend you people, and look what you do to me. It's like, oh. But okay, let's not talk politics. Oh.
I mean, for speaking for my own family, we can't wait to vacation in East Alaska. We are looking so forward to it, actually.
Come on in. It is funny how this is actually a topic of conversation in every news story up here now. It's like, what if we become the 51st state? And it's like, are we actually taking this seriously here?
So you're talking yourself into it.
No, first of all, if we're one state, like the 51st state is bigger than the other 50 combined. Not sure if that really works out geographically. Like, it just doesn't seem to make a lot. Like, I think at some point in our children's lives, Canada and the States is going to be kind of like the EU, where it's a common passport and you cross over the border and things like that without having to go through security and stuff. And I think that's probably what the future is going to end up being.
Well,
just the way we're getting there is in a very strange way. I don't know.
Slow down. I mean, I love you. I love you all. I've been to Alberta. You know this. I think it's a wonderful side of your country. Beautiful territory.
Yes.
But let's be real. Canada has a lot more in common with Siberia than the United States.
Jeez.
You've got this massive land with like 90 people. Okay. Yes. So let's not get ahead of ourselves.
That's why it's a good investment, Scott. It's lots of oil in that land of 90. And this is the thing that drives me about the Canadian government. We should all be stinking rich. Like, we have this giant country that has nothing but natural resources in it. How are we in debt? How is this possible? There's like 27 citizens and $8 zillion in resources. You think we would be able to divide this up in a way where all of us are pretty well off? But I don't know. This is what happens when we elect an empty suit and have them in there for 10 years. But what are you going to do? Good times.
So much for no politics.
Yeah, it's just I hate everybody. It's just I don't like anyone. And based on America's prior elections, I think you guys have the same feeling about just about everybody too. Like, we don't like anyone. But
okay. We're going to
baseball. Bob Uecker's dead. Let's talk about happy news. All right.
Oh, man.
I like Bob.
Oh, man. Yeah. In any case, listeners, everyone tuning in, let's just a couple of preambles here. Forgive us if we're kicking off a little microphone rust on this show. You know, we thought about bringing a guest on today to kick things off for 2025 and, you know, making a bigger return to the airwaves splash. But we thought better of that and decided to maybe get our sea legs a little bit first. So that's what we're doing here today. But we've got a good show as always, and really a lot to talk about to officially close out the 2024 BDL season while jumping straight into the new year here in 2025. But yeah, I mean, Mike, you've of course alluded to it already, and we'll just say first things first. Don't want to get too deep into the pod without acknowledging this. You know, we should pause here and just pay our respects to Mr. Baseball himself, Mr. Bob Uecker, who passed away January the 16th this month here at the age of 90. It was reported, and of course he handled play-by-play duties for the Milwaukee Brewers for, I believe I read 54 seasons, which
is amazing.
Just so amazing. And of course, former a Major League Baseball player, best known for his later career in broadcasting, really. And Uecker was a beloved figure in the sport. And I think Mike primarily so for our generation of baseball fans and pop culture fans, obviously very well known for his role in the Major League film trilogy. Mm-hmm. You know, for yours and my interests too, obviously played a huge role in one of the biggest professional wrestling events and matches of all time. I'm talking about WrestleMania III way back in 1987 at the Pontiac Silverdome, where Uecker served as the ring announcer for the main event, if I recall, between, of course, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. And if you have even a passing knowledge of that area of the WWF, you'll remember the comically famous, I'm sure it's a GIF now, famous clip of Uecker getting his neck wrung by Andre on that show. Mm-hmm. Mike, he was a memorable guy across many layers of sports and entertainment, and he will surely be missed.
Yeah. Like, for me, he will always be remembered as commentator Harry Doyle. Like, and again, you know, particularly up here,
just a bit outside.
It isn't like we got a whole wealth of Brewers TV broadcasts up in Canada. I'm not sure what it was like in the States that whole time, but up here, you know, we know him as the Cleveland Indians play-by-play guy from that movie, which is so cool because his memory is basically going to last forever. Just based on, again, and, you know, as much as he didn't have a giant role in the movie, when you really think about it, he probably recorded his stuff in a couple of days, probably, I'm guessing, in that movie. But he's just got clip after clip from that film, you know, just a bit outside, you know, ball four, ball eight, you know, I think my personal favorite is when he's going over the box score of that day's game. It's like one hit. That's all we got. One goddamn hit. And you know, the guy besides like, you know, you can't say that on the radio. And his response of, don't worry, nobody's listening. It's like, it's just freaking hilarious. Like, he just was amazing in that film. And I'm sure that personality probably transferred to his actual day job, which must have been so much fun for the fans of that club to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm like you, you know, my memories of Uecker, you know, really had nothing to do with the Brewers. And frankly, I mean, most Americans can't find Milwaukee on a map anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's really no surprise. But definitely was sad to see that. But, you know, age 90, certainly lived.
That's a good run.
A very full life, great run. One of the most memorable personalities, as we've talked about, in all of sports and entertainment. And Just a cool guy, cool dude. Mm-hmm. Mike, with that out of the way, we would be remiss to go any further before issuing a big heartfelt Can-Am congratulations to the Boston Double Downs of the BDL, the 2024 Black Diamond League champions. This is the second BDL championship for Kevin and his Double Downs, who officially joined the multi-title club late last year and is clearly, I do say, the best team in the BDL's East Division right now.
I'm still kind of bitter. I faced them. Yeah, I faced them early in the playoffs, and I literally lost that matchup by 1/3 of an inning. And I try not to take these losses, you know, too personally. It's the playoffs. You know, as I've always said, you set your team up, you put them in the best position you can, and you just see what happens. I'd rather lose 10-0 than what happened to me last year, where it was the last game of the matchup, was Sunday Night Baseball. He had, I think it was Jack Flaherty and Evan Phillips, I think one of the relievers on the Dodgers. And I calculated it before the game because I'm an imbecile and I shouldn't do this to myself. But I'm like, the only way he can catch me in whip and ERA, which is what he had to do, is these two guys would have to pitch 8 1/3 shutout between them. And what are the odds of that? Well, guess what happened? Flaherty has the best start of the friggin' year, and Evan Phillips comes in to mop up a game that he normally wouldn't have been in, but the Dodgers scored like a couple in the bottom of the eighth to make it too big a lead. I just stopped talking about it. Just one of those things where he shouldn't have been in the final, but congratulations on your title.
Just the brakes, bro.
Yeah, just disgust me. Yeah,
okay,
shouldn't have been. That was my title. It should have been number four.
Okay.
It was stolen from me.
I need to find my mute button. But no, seriously. How about we save the remaining comments about this specifically in the 2024 season's results for just a little later in the show?
Sure.
Because, Mike, one thing I want to touch on before we get any further is the fact that you are now a CBS Sports mock draft superstar.
I am.
And we need to talk about that a little first. So what exactly have you been up to helping the good folks over at CBS Sports?
Well, not just a mock draft superstar, but a draft superstar. You may remember last year I was invited to join one of their experts leagues, because clearly when you're looking for experts, you look to the BDL. When you look to the BDL, it's only one person you look for, but Scotty wasn't available, Bill wasn't available. So then they got to me and said, hey, man, you want to join our league? And I actually played in an AL-only league for the first time in my life, against a bunch of people that really should know what the hell they're doing. I think it was a 12 or 14 team league. I believe I came in fourth, which is pretty respectable for someone who never played in AL only league before. I believe it was Mike Gianella. I think he writes for Baseball Prospectus, won it.
Wait a minute. How many teams were in this league?
It was either 12 or 14, I want to say.
You could only manage fourth place?
Listen, it's the first time I've been in AL only league. It's a bunch of experts, people that actually do this for a living.
It's like half the players that you need to know. I mean, this should have been a cakewalk.
Like I said, it was very respectable fourth place finish. I beat all of the CBS guys, I believe. I think Scott White was way behind me, and a couple of the other guys I think were in that league as well. It was a pretty respectable finish, and based on that, I've been invited to a number of their mock drafts over last year, and I was actually just in one earlier this week. I somehow got picked right near the end of the draft. I think it was pick 11, and did a nice little job. You know, they just did a podcast talking about the best picks of each round or whatever, and my name did come up a fair bit when they were talking about the best pick, and more importantly, when they were talking about the worst pick, my name was never mentioned, and there's a reason for this. It's because
I will have to look this up. That is, yeah. Well, congratulations to
I
you.
Did a
that,
nice
that
is, job, but, I think.
So as, I'm just curious, so this the recent mock draft, was it based around head-to-head format,
Roto? It was Roto. I was pick 11. Okay. My first pick was Gunnar Henderson,
nice.
one of your guys, and somehow Corbin Carroll was still on the board when it wheeled back to me at pick.
That's criminal.
I thought so. So I got those two with my first two picks, and those were both named the best pick of the round when they did, or each round when they did their little summary show. And overall, that put together a pretty good roster, honestly. But it's unfortunate we're not playing that league out, because I think I would have had a pretty good chance to win that one. So it's kind of fun. So I think I'm on the invite list for when they do these mocks. So I'll probably try to do two or three more before the beginning of the season. You know, it's kind of cool just to get our names out there as part of this. And then when they do have their actual leagues, I'm sure I'll be invited to play in the one I was in last year, certainly, after my dominant fourth place finish and all. It's kind of fun.
Is there a location on CBS where the listeners can see the results of the mocks? You know,
I believe one of the writers is actually putting together a piece to review.
Okay, cool.
This mock today, that I think it was Chris Towers, is one of the writers there. I believe he's putting something together to actually review that mock. So it's probably up on the website right now, actually, if I had to guess.
Good deal. Okay, so that's really cool, Mike.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious too, if you can recall, I haven't participated in a startup league draft, for instance, in so long now. Mm-hmm. My brain just stays calibrated for dynasty, existing mm-hmm. dynasty drafting. Do you recall who the top three or top five were? ADP is looking like.
And I'm actually looking up the article. It is posted for anyone who's interested in taking a look at it. I know it just got posted. The top three picks were Ohtani was one.
Sure.
Bobby Witt Jr. was two. And Aaron Judge was three, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. First two, no surprise. Number three, not really a surprise. Mm-hmm. I think you could have looked at several players there at third overall, in a startup roto. But yep, good deal.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It is interesting because, as you said, our brains are kind of so focused on dynasty. Mm-hmm. That, the way we value guys is a little different than, how they're going to be drafted in a redraft. So, there is that part of your brain that you almost have to turn off when you're drafted, when you're like, hey, this guy's 34 and, he's old. I shouldn't pick him up. Then you think, no, I only need this guy for 6 months. He's going to be 34 all season. That's okay. So, it is kind of interesting how your brain has to kind of adjust to that.
Do you recall, I know I'm peppering you with questions. You're trying to pull this info off the top of your head, but mm-hmm. do you recall who the highest, prospect level player with major league eligibility was? Where that person was taken? Like Paul Skeens has exhausted his eligibility now. Trying to think of like a Dylan Cruz, for instance, or a Jackson Holliday.
Jackson Holliday was definitely drafted. Now his stock has definitely dropped a fair bit from last year, because I remember him being drafted. You slapped
that out of your mouth right now.
I'm not saying my opinion. It's kind of funny because my opinion of him last year was lower than most. And I think my opinion of him now, funnily enough, is higher than most. I just think people have really soured on him far too much. Like, it's, people, he didn't hit last year. It's like, yeah, he should be a sophomore in college, everybody. You want to calm the hell down?
I was going to say, let's chase that rabbit just for a minute. I mean, I have noticed the same thing. And I'm going to let you speak more to this, because from a BDL standpoint, in that context, I'm a very it's difficult for me to have an objective point of view on Jackson Holliday for mm-hmm. obvious reasons, but trying to put my
obvious bias aside,
exactly to yeah. try to put that aside. I think the deflating of his stock. It's a really weird optic to me. Just as you said, I mean, the kid. This will be his age 20 season or 21.
Yeah, 20 or 21. 21. Yeah. I mean, he should be getting drafted this summer.
I mean, James Wood, his career is just starting, really, yeah. after he had a good rookie year last year. Mm-hmm. And he is already 22. We all know, if you follow prospects, you know, power is always the last thing to develop. You know, a prospect like Jackson or a Kobe Mayo, you know, comes up, scorches through the minors, destroys AAA. Mm-hmm. We all know what the step up is from AAA to the major leagues. I mean, that's still a big step up, and you know, there's an acclimation period, and these guys, and this is what I always think, you know, if you're from a dynasty context, you know, you shouldn't be buying hype, and you shouldn't be buying players like Jackson Holliday on a 1 or 2 year, you know, a rental or a, you know, wait and see period. I mean, you know, players of that level and with that high a floor, you ought to be looking at buying their career.
Yep.
And seeing that play out. Now, if at some point, of course, something goes wildly off the rails, and it still could with Jackson, who knows? Mm-hmm. You know, then you look to pivot and get out of that situation. But it's just so early. I mean, like, what are we talking about?
And honestly, I blame, funny enough, podcasts like us and social media, where, you know, people have to have a hot take all the time. So when Jackson was first coming up, you know, you'd hear these imbeciles saying, oh, if there was a, you know, if you were redrafting a dynasty today, would he be the number one pick? And it's like, no, you morons. He hasn't played in the majors yet. No, he wouldn't be the number one. Like, there are superstars that are 23 in the league. Now, might Jackson be that when he's 23? Well, yeah, but he's not yet. So let's calm that down a little bit. And now you have the exact opposite. Like, there was a podcast I was listening to a week or so ago, and they were doing dynasty rankings of middle infielders. And to hear these guys and people that I usually respect, and mm-hmm. to hear these guys talk about, you know, they're not sure if he's going to hit. It's like, they're not sure if Jackson Holliday is going to hit. It's like, really? Based on what exactly? A couple of months in the – like, it's like you hear this stuff. Like, the same people that would tell you this guy is an absolute can't-miss 100% lock 12 months ago, or now, oh, this guy's probably got no shot to be a star. And it's like, you know, you were insane last year and you're insane again now this year in the other direction. It's like, everybody just, he's a 20-year-old kid or 21. He may have just turned 21. Mm-hmm. In 13 years, he's still going to be playing in the majors. Mm-hmm. Like, at minimum, this guy's going to be a good player for a long time. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be more than the minimum. Like,
right.
He was a stud before he got to the minors, there's a reason why he was drafted where he was. This isn't a guy that was picked 212 that then had a hot start in the minors and got called up and didn't do well. Then you might say, well, maybe the hot start was just a fluke. No, this is a guy that had pedigree, who was the topic in the draft, if memory serves, was lights out in every part of the minors, and then went to the majors and didn't have success.
Just as like a baby.
Yeah.
As a baby.
I'll give you the perfect comp. Mike Trout, when he first got called up, didn't have a lot of success. I think his career turned out okay. Like, I'm pretty sure you, as the Holiday owner in our league, I'm pretty sure you'd take Mike Trout's career for him, right? Pretty sure you would. Yep. It's just, you know, everybody just has to calm down. Is he going to be a star this year? I don't think so. I think he's going to be pretty good this year. And I'm pretty sure he's going to be better in 26 than he is in 25. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure he's going to be better in 27 than he's in 26. Like, everybody just calm the hell down. He's going to be just fine. It's just, it's silly. And I think we were just kind of spoiled by a couple of these young guys that came out and were stars on day one. And we forget that they are the exceptions. And not every one number one prospect is going to hit 300 with 40 home runs in his first year. Particularly a guy that plays in the middle of the infield and has a lot of other responsibilities. It's just, you know, I'm sure if you told him the DH last year, told him just worry about hitting, he probably would have hit a little better. But you're throwing him into a contending situation right off the bat with all the pressure in the world. And again, did he have a subpar season? Yeah, based on your expectations. But again, I'm sure he's going to be all right. Just a hunch. just a hunch.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, it's a collective calm down. You know, whether it's a Jaxson Holliday or a Roman Anthony or a Matt Shaw who will likely debut early this year. You know, trust the tools, trust the floor. Just shut up and get out of the way and let it happen.
Scotty, 12 months ago, I was listening to that same podcast, dude, their first base dynasty rankings, and listen to these two guys talk about where we're not sure if Vladdy's ever going to become a star. It's like, all right. It's like 12 months later, same podcast, consensus, first baseman forever. It's like, all right, but what? Everybody calm down. Everybody just calm down.
Agreed.
But hot takes aplenty for everybody.
Well, congrats on your rising star as a contributor to what the folks at CBS Sports are doing. So we'll look to follow your pathetic little career there with great interest.
And you know what? Going forward, I'm no longer going to use my name. I'm going to use the name of the show. That way, when the picks really stink, they can blame you as well. So, yeah, that's what I'm going
to do. I make a habit to never take the credit or the blame for anything that's posted to our social media. I learned
that is a very smart idea. Oh, they hate me, baby. They hate me everywhere. It's great. It's so much. You know what? It is one of the fun things about not having a Twitter account linked directly to my name is I can really turn it up and be a bigger a-hole than I normally am, which is really fun.
It's really big too.
Yeah.
All right. Really is. let's move on. We're going to talk now about the BDL 2024 results and look at them under a microscope and examine a few things here. As we've already talked a little bit already, of course, congrats again to Kevin and the Boston Double Downs of the Black Diamond League for their second championship in league history. Second title in three seasons, as a matter of fact, their first coming in 2022 there, just a couple of years ago. The Double Downs, Mike, won 109 games in 2024, finishing third in the East Division and securing a playoff wild card in the process. So, you know, not a dominant performance by the by the Double Downs late last year there. It was actually a bit of a down year, no pun intended, if you can call winning more than 100 games a down year for Boston after the team tallied, I think it was 124 wins the prior season. But, you know, as we've talked so many times on this show, consistency is what counts in head-to-head fantasy baseball. And Kevin's Double Downs were in the playoffs and winning games when it mattered. And some of those games were against your Rockets, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder. No, his team actually reminds me a lot of my team. And it's funny in our division where the teams have almost kind of adopted like one set personality and how our teams look like. And again, I would never want to play an East team in the playoffs. It's not fun. Like at all.
Who cares?
Yeah, it's just. And again, his team's really good, and his team's been really good for a while. And when you put a really good team in the playoffs, sometimes things are going to work out for you. And they did. And again, he's a fantastic manager. He knows what he's doing.
For sure.
Team's always a competitive team, and he went on a nice little run in the playoffs and got it done. Yeah, it's fantastic for Kevin. Now, crap for teams he beat in the playoffs. I'm not going to go over that again. But, you know, I do feel kind of bad for Brian. Like, he had another great season. And if I remember correctly, that final was not particularly close, if memory serves. So, which sucks for him, but you know, it is what it is.
Well, yeah, your Rockets and the Double Downs, of course, had, if I recall, very, very similar seasons in 2024. Actually, I think you were
a half game maybe, up or something on him. Yeah, you're like crazy like that.
Yeah, man, I think he had one more win than the Rockets did. As a matter of fact, but you had a slightly better record, of course. Yeah. Overall, so very very tight in the East in 24. But I mean, you know, let's be honest, it's usually tight in the East. It's, you know, that's a very tough division. We all know that. But for anyone keeping score here, the last time a third place divisional team, such as the Double Downs in 2024, went on to win the BDL title. It was the 2018 Malibu Bay Bears, who finished third in the North Division that year with 97 wins a half dozen years ago.
I would have never guessed that.
With a 97-win team, Chris and his Bears defeated the Cardinals in what I believe was that club's second appearance, if memory serves, in the BDL Championship Series. So it's been half a dozen years since that happened. But, you know, again, consistency is key. It does happen.
I would have never – it's funny. Chris's team has been so good for so long. I would have never even thought of his team as coming in third place in that dog crap division that he's got at any point. You know, I'm assuming since then he's rattled off division title after division title, I'm guessing.
The Bears have. And of course, you know, I think – well, I don't think. I know. And Chris would you know, readily admit this. There have been much better Bears teams that have come in subsequent years than that 2018 team with, you know, that won a title coming off a 97 win season. You know, in some respects, the Bears are starting to remind me a little bit of the Generals in the sense that, you know, our very, very best teams in Gotham City, the best years we've ever had, we did not walk away with the championship, but we
I know we've heard away 19 million times.
Yes, I know you have, but you know what, Mike, this is my podcast and you're going to hear it.
Okay, go ahead. Let's hear about the 3 years where you're the top team in the league and you got hosed. Didn't the Bears knock you out in one of those seasons?
They did,
right? I'm trying to get us back on topic, right? It was the Bears that knocked you out one of those years, right?
It was a 9-1 thrubbing.
So it was close. Nice choke job, Generals. Nice choke job. It's the playoffs, you know. It's important to show up for those games too, you know. So, yeah. See, that's me getting us back on topic. You're welcome.
I hope we annex the entirety of Canada, I swear.
It wouldn't take long. wouldn't take long. We have the world's biggest military. It wouldn't take long. Yum, yum. A couple of Southerners in a pickup would probably take the country over pretty fast, yeah. So.
Yeah, the beer. Getting back on track, and screw you, by the way. Yeah. But trying to get back on track. The Bears had another great year, of course, and I know that it was a shot through Chris's chest and heart, and just went in one side and out the other, and it. I know that was a rough playoff.
It was my pick to win it all last year. Yeah.
He had a great shot, as good a shot as any team, I believe, in the BDL in 24. And that's just what happens in the playoffs. And, you know, I think as we've talked, you know, a few times over the course of the last couple of years or so, that team is probably at a bit of a crossroads. And I think you saw a little bit of maybe the Bears' intent to explore what it would be, what it would look like to reshape the club a little bit. You know, the Generals and the Bears have done a little bit of business this offseason, so kind of a sneak peek there. But, you know, Chris has kept Malibu Bay in a posture to still compete coming into this season as well. So, good for him. But factoid about the BDLCS in 24. And I am going over my list one more time just to make sure I am looking at this correctly. Yeah. I don't think I'm missing anything here looking at this list. By my eyeballs, the 2024 BDL Finals was the very first in 20 seasons was the very first rematch in the history of the BDL Finals. The first time two teams have met for the second time in the finals. The 2013 matchup was Cramps and Double Downs, with Crawford taking that trophy with a 6-4 victory. And of course, a few months ago, to close out 2024, Boston returned the favor with an 8-2 victory there to claim their second title. And if you go up and down the list of BDL finals results since the start of the league, you'll see we don't have another repeat. Matchup in the history of the league. I think that's pretty remarkable.
That's almost mathematically impossible when you think about it.
It speaks to the parity of the league in my mind, you know. I'll bore the audience.
It's what we do.
It's what we do. starting with the head-to-head era, starting with the 2006 finals, you had Berserkers Falcons, Generals Falcons, Bulldogs Killer Cars, Damage Killer Cars, Damage Epidemic, Rockets Damage, Wallabies Beers, Cramps Double Downs, which is the first of the two, Generals Cramps, Damage Elevation, Scorpions Damage, Generals Elevation, Beers Cardinals, Cardinals Scorpions, Rockets Amish, Rockets Cramps, Double Downs Rockets, and finally, Cramps Beers in 2023, and then finally Cramps and Double Downs for the second time in 2024. And you're right; it is almost mathematically impossible. Yeah. But it's astounding.
Now, is that taking into consideration like teams that changed owners and changed names? I assume it probably does too, right? That would be too hard for you to figure out top of your head, but I'm thinking it might. I'm thinking it might. That's really impressive. Jeez. Like it's funny just because there's some teams that have made the finals a bunch of times. And you think at some point, you know, when that constant is on one side of the bracket, you think they would have accidentally bumped into the same team twice, you know, with Bill making the finals like 3-4 straight years, him having a different opponent every year, particularly when it was East West, you know, you would thought he would have bumped into the same opponent on the other side of that at some point, but no. Mm-hmm. And then I think I made 3 straight finals and I had 3 different opponents. It's pretty crazy when you think about
it. That's correct. You know, I'm going up and down the list here. Mike, there isn't one that jumps out.
Like the Falcons became the Bears, right?
The Falcons became the Bears.
Who did the Falcons get in the finals?
The Falcons got your team. Okay, your prior team.
And I've never played Chris in the finals. So you've never played Chris.
The Falcons got the Generals, and the Generals have never played the
Bears because the Generals have never made it that far in the playoffs since Chris made it joined the league. So that makes sense.
No, that's incorrect. I don't want to belabor this and spend so much time on it.
But it's pretty impressive, though. Yeah, it's got a cool stat.
I think it's a really cool stat.
It is.
Just another little thing here, and of course we've already mentioned Boston won the.
Yeah, you brought it up. Yeah,
Boston won the BDL championship following a 100.
I'm supposed to be the smart Italian guy in this league, for God's sakes! What the hell, man? Jeez.
Oh well,
I didn't last long.
but Kevin pulled off the championship in 24 with the 109 win regular season. Mm-hmm. In Europe, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot here because I already know the answer to the question I'm going to ask. But do you think that is a high or low number for a championship club? A 109 win regular season.
Like it's a little on the low side. But I don't think it's crazy. You know, you also have to put in the East FX rate on that. You know, you have to add a few wins to all of our totals because we play each other and we kind of smack each other around a fair bit. So, you know, if you're in the East and you got 109, if you're in the South, you're probably 112 or 113. And I'm being kind to the South. I'm really trying to be nice. But you know what I mean? Like 109 wins in our division. It's pretty impressive. So is it a little on the low side? Yeah, but it's not crazy low.
So I took time before the show today to run down the list of BDL champions in the history of the league.
And, so you saw my name a lot. Yeah.
And look at the number of wins in their respective regular seasons in the year that they won and came up with that average. So what do you think then is the average number that a club needs to hit in this league to win a title? I'll tell you what it is.
114.66.
You're still several wins low.
Several? What is it? Mm-hmm.
The average number based on BDL history, the average number regular season wins that you need to have a good shot at winning a championship, according to the average, 121.5.
That is interesting. And I do wonder how much, like, Bill had those years where he had nine highs in that division. Bill knocked our average up a bit.
There were a couple of years there, Bill won 150 games.
That's what I'm saying. So I think that really skews the number a little bit. But still, it's even seeing that, it's a little higher than I would have expected.
And even, you know, if you took the last, say, 10 years instead of the last 20 years, you still, Mike, have some Cramps teams that won titles that won a heck of a lot of games. You had some Rockets teams that won titles that won a heck of a lot of games.
Yeah.
And by the way, this I threw out, of course, the 2020 bracket. You couldn't factor that in.
It's impossible.
I just threw that one out, and you know, there was no way to calculate in 2005. Yeah. So this was an 18 season average.
Yep.
But that's the number. So if you're out there and you're building a team and you're sniffing a wild card or you're trying to make moves to capture a division, and you're thinking to yourself, what's that number? How good do I actually need to be in order to have a probable run at a BDL title? It's actually around 120 wins. So,
well, it's a good thing Kevin didn't take that advice last year.
Hey,
it's a good thing.
Things happen that drive that average down. You know?
Yes, indeed.
Well, Mike, just to continue on the 2024 season thread here as we wrap things up for that BDL season.
How did your team do in the playoffs last year?
Well, Mike, we made the playoffs. What else do you want to know?
Yeah, that's a good point. How'd they go? Like in week one, who'd you get?
we got a very frisky Rockets club in week one.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, we're looking forward to next year.
There you go. Good thinking. And to be honest, I'm happy I got you last year because I got a funny feeling you're going to go on a continued run at this point. So I'm kind of happy that I was able to knock you out of the playoffs once because I don't think that's happening anytime soon. So I'm happy I got you when I did. Time and place, baby.
You give me grief, 10 minutes ago about talking about the Generals on this pod. And now you're basically goading me into talking about the Generals on this pod. So
we're going to talk about them losing. That's okay. That's fine.
But you know how this goes. We talk about them losing. It will be Gat me talking about us winning.
Yeah,
that's
a good point. It's a good point. Yeah. Let's change the topic. You're right.
I want to ask, about any surprises in the 2024 divisional results that we saw over the course of course, last season there. And I've got a question for each division, Mike, and I'll just kind of hit those one by one. We'll go down. And then if you have any other tidbits you just want to kind of throw in there or whatnot, we'll do that too. But let's start with your division and the East. So I'll just pose the question. Is it a surprise that the Cardinals won the East Division for a second consecutive year?
Yeah, not really. Yeah, not really. His team on paper was probably the best of our clubs, I think, going in. Like, I'm a little surprised that the gap, I want to say he won about like 10 games, something like that, right?
He won it 11 games.
11 games, yeah. So am I a little surprised it was that big a gap? Yeah, I guess. I'm sure he's probably a little surprised it's that big of a gap. But at the beginning of the year, if you asked me, and you probably did, how many teams from the East are going to make the playoffs, I probably would have said three, and I probably would have named the three correctly. And had you put a gun to my head and picked, say, pick an order, probably would have got the order right too. So, honestly, I think the league last year was about as chalk as it ever has been. I think if you would have asked the two of us at the beginning of the season to pick the eight teams that are going to be in the playoffs, I think we probably would hit all eight of them, I'm thinking.
I'm trying to recall our season preview last year, and I don't recall exactly how that went. We'll have to go back and look at it.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a surprise. You know, it's the East. And maybe you can consider this a bit of a chalk question because, it's the East is always a coin flip. And as the disposable heroes continue their march toward respectability again in the league and in the division, it's going to become even more of a coin flip.
Yeah, that scares me.
It's, you know, Bill there is not that far away from giving y'all fits again.
Might be this year, Scotty.
Could be as soon as this year. I think that club is knocking on the door of a wild card right now.
And that's when I really start crying about these unbalanced divisions. But as bad as I've been for the last few years, if his team turns into what I think it might in the next year or two, but get ready for some majorly bitching out of me. So, yeah.
Just man up and win.
I'm trying, man.
The West Division. Is it a surprise that the Cramps added wins to their record for the third straight season? Going back 3 years, 130 wins, 131 wins, 135 wins. Now, granted, that came off of a 2022 season where the Cramps had 147 wins, so they had a bit of a drop off there, and some injuries too. Let's be fair while we're talking about it. But is it a surprise that the Cramps added wins year over year?
No, that division was real dog shit last year. so not really surprised. And Brian's team is amazing. And Brian's team is one of those, how can I say this delicately? Some contending teams are just kind of solid all round. And if they played a bad team, they beat them 7-3, 8-2 every week. Other teams like Brian's are kind of built to absolutely annihilate bad teams. And so if you put them in a division with, no disrespect intended, three teams that are not very good, two in particular, he's going to slap them around really, really convincingly. And I haven't gone back and looked at the results, but I'm guessing his division record was rather ridiculous last year. It has been off and on for the last little while.
His division record was 52-17-1. Actually, it was not the best division record in the league.
52-17-1.
That was his interdivision record in the West. In the North, the Bears had a division record of 53-12-5.
Yeah, it's another dog shit division.
So you're basically saying we have two strong divisions, two weak divisions.
No, I'm saying we have
the South and the East.
Yeah, one strong, one and three. No, again, just doing the math in my head, and I might be wrong. But 52-17-1 is like a 750 club. And that's pretty bloody impressive. It really is.
Yeah, I think your math is pretty bad here. Not on that point, but you know, your line of comments, you're basically suggesting. I'm not trying to be combative. I'm just responding.
Of course not. Never. Never combative.
Your line of comments suggests that there are essentially three bad divisions and one good division in the BDL.
No, I wouldn't say that. I'd say there's three bad divisions and one great division in the BDL. I'm sorry. I may have misspoke there. Yeah, one great division. And then again, it's not your fault the rest of your vision is the way it is. It's not Brian's fault the rest of I'm not blaming you guys. Actually, I wish I was you guys. Like, it would be kind of cool to set my lineup April 1st and not look at it again until the middle of July. That would be kind of fun, honestly. You know, takes the stress completely off the running the team thing. But yeah, if we, that would be kind of fun, actually. You know, just such a lineup once. Yeah. But yeah, it's
that was a direct shot at the Vipers, is what that was.
Yeah, that wasn't who I was thinking of, for sure. Again, it is what it is. You know, people keep telling me it's cyclical. I'm waiting for that cycle to flip. It's been a while. Like, Joe used to always rag, oh, yeah, you know, these things change over time. Yeah, it's been a long damn time. Like, I've been, I know the two of us were discussing, like, the run that my team is on now. I think we're entering year, what was it, 15?
You are entering the Rockets. No, I think the Rockets are entering year 16. I thought, of above 500 play.
Yeah. And I think I've been over 100 wins and.
In all of one those? Season.
All but one?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Since yeah, oh yes, in all of those, in all of your your above 500 seasons, yes, your first 2 years in the league, which were 08 and 09. Yeah,
horrendous. Worst team ever.
You purposefully rebuilt didn't know
what I didn't
you
know
were
what
doing.
I was doing. Yes, I was I was full value for those records. Actually, and I'm not sure if this record still holds. We may have to look into this. I believe, and I could be wrong, my team is still the only one that went through the entire season without winning a single matchup.
I think that still stands.
That is pretty impressive when you think about it. Hard.
The Wallabies were pretty bad last year. Did we check that last year? We probably should.
Yeah, but he's pleasing the South, so there's always a chance of him bumping into a win against one of the other also-rans in your division. But I believe my team is the only team to do that, which is amazing because my team that year certainly doesn't have the worst record ever. We were just very good at losing like 8-2 every single week. It was pretty amazing when you think about it. But going back to how kind of things change, how divisions around and stuff. Like, it's been 15 years, guys. Come on, figure it out, people.
Jeez. I've got to share this. I just looked it up. So the Wallabies had 2 wins last year.
Who'd they beat? Was it me? Please say you beat me. It'd be hilarious.
No. He beat the Vipers twice.
How many wins did the Vipers have last year?
I'll pull that right.
It would be so fantastic if Stoney beat the Chicks twice. That would be glorious. I know that's not the case, but it would be glorious.
The Vipers had 61 wins last year.
And wins during the season? How many teams did he beat?
And I am getting there.
And we were boring the crap out of people, but this is funny.
Oh, I think this is compelling radio. Yeah, let's see. The Vipers actually have several wins last year. They beat the Amish, of course.
Of course.
The Vipers beat the Scrappers.
Uh-huh.
They beat the Swamp Dogs.
Nothing but big wins.
This
is the Division 3 schedule he put together. Who else has he got?
Is that true?
Is it a good team?
The Vipers also beat the Wallabies twice. And that was due to the flex week.
Yeah.
So the Wallabies and the Vipers played 4 times last season and split those mass-ups.
Pretty impressive. It's a good thing we're not selling tickets to any of these matchups. Jeez. We'll be friends and family only in some of these. Man. They played each other 4 times last year. Oh, God. It's pathetic.
Talk about ratings.
Yeah. Just come watch the fight for the first pick in the draft, everybody. Oh, man. So, yeah. All right. What's our next topic, Scotty? What else you got on the agenda?
I don't know. Maybe we should just end the show.
I'm sure that's what our listener is thinking. Yeah.
Okay. So, any surprises, this is a South Division question.
Oh, Jesus.
Is it a surprise that the Generals reclaimed the South Division with 119 wins after a 2-year rebuild?
No, Next question.
Okay. North Division. Is it a surprise that the Bears won the North by a whopping 34 games?
That sounds about right. Sounds about right. Eh. Chris's team is fine. In fairness, if you would have put Chris's team in the East, I think they would have won the East. If you would have put them in, if you put them in the South, they would have lapped the South. The only question is if you would have put him in the West with Brian, who would have won that division. But his team, again, as much as I disparage divisions, I'm not going to disparage that roster. That was a hell of a team. So, no, I'm not surprised that he won that division going away. No, absolutely not. That was a great team.
Well, and it should be noted that that divide has only widened in recent years. The Bears have won the North at least three straight years, and it's just as far back as I did my notes here. They won the North by 6.5 games in 2022, 26.5 games in 2023, and then of course 34 games in 2024.
You guys put up a hell of a fight in that division, everybody. Jeez, all right. Well, I got faith in Steven putting together a good team soon.
The Mounties are on the upswing. I do believe that's true, and we won't maybe step on the toes of our season preview show coming up here in a few weeks, but I will concur with that point.
I'm optimistic of them getting a fair bit better this year.
Yeah. Well, guys, the Can-Am Super Show is already priming the pump for our 2025 season preview. We've got a lot to talk about, Mike. After a pretty active off season, we're looking forward to that upcoming show, as I mentioned earlier, which you can expect, I think, sometime in March, probably early March. We're preparing a different show for next month in February. We cannot wait to dive into BDL draft news and chat about what the younger generation of up-and-coming BDL clubs looks like, and how guys like Roki Sasaki will impact divisional races here in the coming years. And that conversation is coming your way in February here on the Super Show, and you can expect a special guest or two peppered in there as we roll into spring training. So just be on the lookout for that. But for now, we've got a few loose ends to tie up, and we're going to do that right now with our off-season hits. No misses.
Hits. Only hits.
Only hits. So, Mike, are you ready to roll?
I think so.
All right. So, in reverse order, number three, our off-season hits for the 2024-2025 BDL off-season. Number three, the Baltimore Epidemic. Matt Reynolds, our buddy Matt Reynolds, makes his return to the BDL, becoming the only team / manager to ever return to the BDL after having stepped away for a period of time. Mm-hmm. Our friend Matt previously competed here in the BDL for 8 seasons between 2009 and 2016. Just a few little quick notes on the Epidemic and their history in the BDL for some of our newer owners who were not around at the time. The Epidemic captured one division title. That was the 2009 East Division title. They have one BDL Finals appearance under their belt, which was a 2010 loss to the NorCal Damage. And if memory serves,
that beating, if I remember correctly,
that matchup still stands as the only shutout in the history of the BDL Championship Series. Yeah, that was a 10-0 loss.
Yeah.
And was the Damage's second BDL title.
Mm-hmm. He almost repeated.
Don't.
Sorry about that. Almost. So close.
Not for those pesky Rockets.
Yes.
Matt brings a previous overall record of 812, 734, 92 back to the BDL. Mm-hmm. So he posted a win percentage of 524 during the 8 seasons that he was here previously. So that's, you know, over 8 seasons, that's a consistent impressive run there. So He re-enters the league, not in the East Division, in the West Division, where he will expect to compete with the Elevation for a wild card, I suppose, here in the early stages of his new tenure. So, Mike, your comments.
I'm excited for a few reasons. One, I like Matt. He's a good dude. And he was a really good manager when he was here before. Now, it's kind of amazing that that was his team name. Like, he was the Epidemic before COVID, which is really freaking cool. It's too bad he wasn't around during the actual epidemic, because that would have been the coolest freaking name to be running with during the our COVID season there for a couple of years. But fantastic guy, fantastic owner. Happy he's back. Happier that he's not in my division. It is kind of nice. Actually, I'm thinking this is actually Scotty's plan. He's going to try to recruit some of the old East managers and then just drop them into divisions of his rivals. Very, very smart when you think about it. You know, I think Craig's he's going to have Craig come back soon and drop him in the North, you know, that sort of thing. It's kind of cool. So, yeah, I'm happy he's back. I'm sure he's going to have success almost immediately, because when he first joined the league, he had success almost immediately. The name Matt has done very well in this league for some reason. So now we got two of them, which, again, I wish we'd bring in some crappy owners. But no, he's going to do a great job, and I'm really, really happy he's back.
Yeah, I think it was a great day for the BDL when we learned that the Epidemic had interest in returning to the league, mm-hmm. and just so happened to have an opening at that time. So the timing was perfect for for everyone involved there. And, you know, I think that the thing I really appreciate the most about Matt and about having him back is simply that, you know, at least in his prior tenure, and I imagine this hasn't changed all that much, if at all, he's not the type to get cute in fantasy baseball. He is about winning and trying to win. And not being, and I mean this in a positive way, not being afraid to sacrifice future for present, mm-hmm. in the best of ways.
Yep.
And I think that will only mean a greater degree of divisional competition, certainly in the West there. Agreed. So it'll be fun to watch.
Agreed.
All right. Offseason hits number two, counting up to number one, number two. The Rockland Rockets, Mike, here we go.
Ah, that's me.
Acquire the services of Aaron Judge. So when Mike and his Rockets lose the division, get waxed by the eventual champion in the playoffs.
Waxed. Is that the term you're going to go with?
It is for this show.
Sweet Jesus.
What do you do in that case? Well, of course, you go out and you grab Aaron Judge, because what else would you do?
Now, what we do is we go home and cry about it. And what's funny about that trade is I'm typically very, very aggressive in the offseason. This was not me being aggressive to go get Aaron Judge. Johnny... And I can only – how should I say this with due respect? Johnny sent me a really reasonable offer. And to those of you that are in this league and have been for a while, those things don't happen all the time. So, you know,
he didn't send you a reasonable offer. He sent you an opportunity to slap yourself in the face.
Or, you know, again – he sent me a really reasonable offer. Okay. So, and again, everybody talks to me. I don't know why, maybe because I'm a great guy, but everybody in this league talks to me.
No.
So whenever teams get offered like absolutely crap offers, they, for some reason, they immediately send it to me and say, would you look at this shit? Happens all the time. Like literally almost every day someone sends me one of these things. And while Johnny may not be the biggest offender of this, but he's up there. So when the team that historically has the reputation of sending offers that don't make sense, when they send you one that makes a lot of sense, it almost confuses you and freezes you for a little while. Because you look at it and you're like, all right, this makes sense. And this is really reasonable. And if Chris sent this to me, I'd be like, oh, that makes a lot of sense for him and makes sense for me.
You would have rejected it outright.
I would not have. But it's one of those things where you look at it, yeah, this is someone who took the time to really sit down, look at his roster, and look at your roster, and put together something that would really work out. This is something I'm either going to accept or I'm going to have a quick chat with him, and we'll add or take something away, and we'll get this done. When Johnny sends you an offer like this, you immediately go to Google and find out if Aaron Judge just died in a car accident or something, because something is just wrong here, because this makes far too much sense for Johnny. But then you look at it and you're like, no, this is actually a very logical trade for him and a very logical trade for me. And I think we went up and down with counters, and I just ended up accepting the offer exactly as he originally sent it, if memory serves.
Yeah, and that was the problem. Which is kind of
cool. That doesn't happen. That was the problem.
Let's recap the deal first before we. So in the deal, the Rockets send Gleyber Torres, Jake Berger, Jazz Chisholm to the Killer Cars in return for Aaron Judge, Joey Loprofito, and some guy, Brando Mayonnaise or something.
Yes, I don't even know something like that. Yeah.
And there were a few minor draft picks peppered in there, and we won't get into the minutia of that. But my take, this is a rare trade that saw the Rockets probably give up way too much. Although in a deal, you know, if I'm being totally fair, that the Rockets really needed to make, considering the state of the East Division and the fact that the guy behind you in the division just won a championship.
Thanks for the reminder.
You know, let's be honest as well. It's not every day that a player like Aaron Judge is made available in the BDL. So I guess just more from the horse's mouth. I mean, what really made you pull the trigger here? Was it that motivation to, you know, try to keep up with your division mates there in the East? Did you just really love the value that much? I mean, I don't agree with that, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't to keep up with teams in the East. I just, that's not how I work. I don't look at who else in my division. I just make deals that I think make sense for my team.
Well, what happened here?
Yeah, it's just I think when you have a chance to pick up one of the best, again, as just going back to our prior topic, the beginning of the show, where we did a redraft, Aaron Judge was the third pick in that draft. And the guy that picked one was debating Otani or Judge. That's how highly regarded Aaron Judge is. So, and as much as I hate trading Jazz, I literally just got him back. I think I was the original owner of him. And I just traded for him last offseason. It's just one of those deals where, from my team's perspective, I just couldn't say no to it. I'm bringing in one of the best hitters in the game. He's not super old, you know, and the value just seems appropriate. It didn't seem like a crazy, like it was a reasonable ask, but it didn't seem like a crazy ask. And, you know, I try not to overthink things that make sense at first blush. And when I first looked at it, I said, well, I like Judge a lot more than Jazz. And what I gave up for Jazz was decent, but I would have certainly given that up and more for Aaron Judge. And I added Jake Berger to the deal, a guy who I really like, but a guy who likes to strike out a lot. And, you know, the way I look at that trade is I gave up a really good player and two guys that I should be able to replace rather cheaply. And I got Aaron Judge. So as dumb as this may sound to me, in my brain, it almost turns out to, would you trade Jazz Chisholm for Aaron Judge? And the answer is yes. And I always think to myself, I can replace Gleyber Torres. I just traded for Gleyber Torres. It was like a second or third round pick. I just picked up Jake Berger. I can replace – those guys are easy to find. I can find those guys. I can't find Aaron Judge. I can't find Judge. But I can replace the other guys.
I totally agree with that. I understand that. I'm looking at this strictly from a valuation standpoint. It was a rich deal.
It might have been. It might have been. But I didn't think it was hyper rich. Like if Aaron Judge was worth a dollar, maybe I traded $1.06 for him. And I'm okay. And again, this is something it's always been kind of my mindset. I don't mind overpaying a little on deals. That's fine. Don't get greased. But if that's sure. a slight overpay, all right, I'll make that overpaid 99 times out of 100 just because I'm confident enough in my ability to find the kind of B-minus, C-plus players that were the overpay part of that deal, if that makes sense.
Well, on the cars, killer cars side of this ledger, I'll just say that I think Johnny has managed actually to make, maybe as crazy as this sounds, mm-hmm. two best trades this offseason with his acquisition of the Rockets trio being followed very recently by his acquisition of outfielder Jackson Merrill, who came over in a trade this month.
I really like that trade.
Right, from the elevation. Not that Johnny gave up nothing for Merrill. There were players that went back to the elevation I did like, but it was a good deal for the Cars.
Yeah, and I thought
that club has somehow gotten both younger and better this mm-hmm. offseason, which mm-hmm. isn't a particularly easy thing to do in this league.
So it is not.
Kudos to the killer Cars. Yep. Great offseason. I think they've won the offseason so far.
I think he's done a really nice job. Yeah. Which is good because I think the league is better when the Cars are a contending team.
I agree. It's it's one of those. I hate to put it this way because I don't want to downplay other owners and other clubs in
our
league.
I'm okay doing that.
You know, it's the NBA playoffs are more interesting when the Celtics and the Lakers are in the playoffs or Agreed. in the New York Knicks.
Now,
and
I'm not sure if we can call the Cars the league again. And I love where you went with that. I really understand where you're going with that. But it was funny as you said that. I'm like, well, those are the two teams with the most titles. That's why it's interesting. The way that I look at it is when I joined this league, the Cars were kind of the gold standard of the league for a little bit. And then Bill kind of became that. And then he got really good again for a short period of time. And now he's been kind of not a bad team. He's just kind of been kind of, a 500-ish team. And that, in my opinion, that's almost the worst place to be, where you're kind of that 85-win team and you don't know if you should go forward or you should back up. That's the worst spot to be. I never want to be in a spot where I don't know what the team's going to do. Like if I'm going to suck, then suck, but I'd rather just be in contend mode all the time. But it's a very hard spot to be where you're just kind of like the ninth best team in the league, particularly where you have a guy like Aaron Judge on your roster and you're like, I'm wasting this guy's prime years on a ninth place team. It's a very, very hard spot to be in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Mike, let's now talk about the number one on our list of the offseason hits. The Portsmouth Wallabies trade the first overall pick in the upcoming BDL draft, which starts Monday as we mm-hmm. are recording the show. Maybe different depending on when you are listening to this show, but mm-hmm. the Wallabies, of course, sent the 1-1 mm-hmm. to the Moncton Mounties. Mounties for the number 2 overall and a 2026 second rounder.
Mm-hmm.
From the Wallabies' point of view, the club, I think, clearly wanted to, trade out of the top spot in a weak draft while still having an opportunity to grab one of the better players available this year, along with adding another pick next year.
Yep.
Mike, your immediate reaction to Brent deciding to move the first overall pick.
This is something that drives me crazy all of the time. Every draft year this happens, someone will have pick 1 or pick 2, and there will be an obvious player there that should be chosen. And they'll get cute. I really like this other guy better. Well, that's great. The market doesn't think so, you imbecile. Don't the other guy trade down. So I will never, ever, ever criticize a team that has the number 1 pick that looks at the board and says, well, the entire world thinks player A should go one, but I don't want to draft player A. Fine, trade the pick. And that's what he did. And that's the right thing to do. Now, you could argue, did he get enough for it? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I don't care. At the end of the day, he did the right thing. From everything I hear from my inside sources, he wasn't going to draft the guy who should go number one, who's the pitcher from Japan, who just signed with the Dodgers, not the Jays, for God's sakes. So he will be the number one pick. Breaking news, Steven is taking him number one. Sure. So, and again, so if you're Brent, if you're not going to take Sasaki one, you have no business holding on to that pick. So kudos to him for moving it and getting some extra value. And if you want to argue it's not enough, that's up to you, Scott. That's your call. But from my perspective, if you're not going to make that pick, you have to move it, and that's the right thing to do.
That's a tough question. Was it enough? I think it – is it fair to say it was just enough? You know, I don't think it was a bad deal for the Wallabies. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a spectacular deal for the Wallabies. Does that
sounds fair. Yeah, that sounds
appropriately.
Fair. Yeah.
And I tell you what, I try my best on when we get together and talk about the league like this to not get into other owners' business, really. I mean, we can talk about things that happen.
That is the exact opposite of what I do on this program.
No, I mean, and what I mean is, you know, we are reactionary,
yes,
you know, on this show, you know, and I try not to get in up in people's business, but, mm-hmm. You know, putting that aside, but I think this was a big missed opportunity for your division mate, Bill.
Ooh.
And the Disposable Heroes, who had a ton of assets that he could have expended to, mm-hmm. procure the number one overall pick. And with the Heroes on the upswing and where they are right now in the league and in the division, Sasaki,
mm-hmm.
made a ton of sense for that team.
He would have.
I really just don't understand how or why that deal did not happen. And I, you know, maybe it wasn't even discussed. Maybe,
yeah.
I have no idea, but that seemed to me to have been the deal that both sides could have really benefited from.
Maybe I'm going to take a different tact on this. If I'm Brent and I'm picking number one, if it is within the realm of possibility that Brent is really in love with the guy that he wants to pick, whoever that is, I don't know who it is. I got to guess, but it's possible he really wanted to draft this guy number one. And he thought to himself, well, either I'm going to draft my guy number one, or I'm going to move back just enough where I can guarantee still getting the guy that I really want and add a little bit more value. And Steven was the only person who could guarantee to him, you're still going to get your guy and you're going to add a little more to it. So maybe that was the mindset going in.
Well, and I understand that mindset, and that may well have been the case. I guess my retort to that would be, if you are the Heroes and you acquire the 1-1, why on earth do you take any player in this draft other than Roki Sasaki?
Oh, he will. But what I'm saying is, if you're Brent and the guy you want is going to go number two, you now have to make a trade with Bill, get a bunch of value, and then find a way to trade back into the draft to get the guy you really want, if that makes sense.
Hmm.
Now, that being said, I'm also the guy that says, never get so attached to a bloody prospect. Trade for value. So
sure.
I do get your perspective of, hey, you know, Brent really wanted this one guy, but if you get more value from somebody else, do that. But I'm thinking his thought process might have been, I just want to move back just far enough where I can still get my guy, which is
sure. Cool. No harm. On the flip side of that, my other question here is, if you're the Mounties, was it the right time in your rebuild to make that move? Is your team ready for a Roki Sasaki?
I don't know. He's young, right? Sucks. What, 25?
20, I think he's 23.
23. That I have no issue with the trade from his perspective. Like, at the end of the day, all he did was give up an extra pick to move up to get the guy he wanted, right?
Sure.
And he's 23. Like, if this was when you drafted the Japanese pitcher last year, I can't remember how old Yamamoto was.
He was 25.
Okay. Even in that case, I wouldn't have been super. It would have been one thing if you're moving up to get one of these guys that's 28 or 29. At that point, I might say, hey, you know, I don't know if you want to, you know, sell to get, you know, to bring in a guy that's near the beginning. Is that the peak of his career where you can only think to yourself you're only going to get maybe 3 or 4 good years out of him? With the case of Steven, he went in to pick up a guy that should be drafted at this age. Like, this is an older guy coming over from Japan. This is a guy that would have been 1 year out of college if he was American, right? So, I have no issue with what he did there. Is he going to compete this year? I'm not sure. I wouldn't think so. Like, he would have to be a big step up for that roster to be competing for a playoff spot. But I think how you get good is by adding as many of these kind of young, really good players as you can. And, you know, typically over the case of, and again, of all the people to be talking to you on this, it doesn't have to take forever to rebuild, which is something you know better than anybody in this league. So, to make a move like that, I think makes sense for him. I don't believe in 5-year rebuilds, I guess what I'm trying to say.
Well, and neither do I. I don't think you believe in rebuilds at all, frankly.
No, again, I'm a believer of figure out what the hell you're doing, get your team set up, and then keep doing whatever you're doing. It's worked okay for me.
Yeah, but you're the guy who probably had his mortgage paid off at like 32. So
I bought my house when I was 31. I had it paid off 14 years later, I guess.
Okay, just go shove it up your rear end.
Love you too, Scott. Yeah.
historical context for these things, these types of moves, trades, is always, to me, fun to explore. So I have a few factoids, Mike, for our listeners today. Would like your reaction here, too, of course. Based on my research, the number one pick in the draft, in the BDL draft, has been traded a total of 7 times in BDL history. So a little more often than I would have thought off the top of my head, actually. It last happened several years ago now in 2020 when the Amish Brotherhood acquired the first overall pick in the 2021 draft, originally owned by the NorCal Damage. Mm-hmm. That year in 2021, the Amish selected Spencer Torkelson.
Oh, God.
First overall.
Oh.
Now, prior to that, prior to then, it last occurred 5 years before then in 2015 when the Amish.
Oh, Jesus. I think I know who it is, too.
Acquired the first overall.
Was this Pedro Alvarez?
In the 2016 draft, originally owned by the Richmond Rebels.
Okay.
And you are incorrect.
Oh,
the Amish selected Yoan Moncada.
Oh, my God. You know what? He's better than Torkelson. All right. Not by much.
I guess that's saying something.
It is.
So Torkelson and Moncada were the last two players that were acquired by pick trade at the number one overall slot. So
Is the Amish should never trade for the number one draft pick.
Now, this will when I keep going further here, it's going to get funnier because the next two times or the previous two times that the pick was acquired, it's the same team both times yet again. So prior to 2015, the Cramps acquired the first overall pick in the 2011 draft. And prior to that, they acquired the first pick in the 2010 draft.
And so that was Harper and Strasburg, wasn't it?
You got those right on the head.
Bryce Harper in 2011, Steven Strasburg in 2010, the Crawford Cramps selected. So kind of knocking those out of the park.
And there, this is why the cramps and the homage of the homage. Man. Harper created more value in one season than Joe's two picks did in the careers.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that hurts. So, Torkelson really hurts a lot though, man.
So it's funny how this keeps going, because the final two times, the first two times this occurred, it also involves the same team.
That was you, picks. Right?
Prior to then, the Generals acquired the first pick in the 2008 BDL draft and acquired the first pick in the 2007 BDL minor league draft. Okay. Now, there's a distinction here. Going back that far in league history, for it was it maybe just that 1 year, could have been 2 years. I don't recall.
I think it was two.
We actually split our drafts. We had a major league draft and then an amateur draft. And then finally we just combined everything into a catch all draft. So that's the reason there's a distinction there in 07, but
I think I know one of the names.
Okay. The first overall,
considering I wasn't even in the league, but I remember reading it somewhere. Was Jay Bruce one of them?
So the Generals acquired Jay Bruce with the first overall pick in the 2007 minor league draft.
I got a ridiculous memory. This is sick.
And the following year acquired Johnny Cueto.
I was going to say a pitcher. Yep.
In the 2008 draft.
Also so better than Joe's picks. Yes, also better. Also better.
Poor Joe.
I really feel for him, because it isn't like he got the number one pick and then reached for somebody. He took the consensus guy. Just when he's there, the consensus guy flames out. I feel bad for him. It's not his fault. You know, he didn't pick someone who's 28th on the board and pick him one. That's too good. Yeah, it's too bad. That happens.
Well, just one other factoid. I'm gonna let you guess this. This is just for fun. This is not a trade, but while I was doing the research, I just wandered upon it. The first ever number one overall draft pick in the BDL's head-to-head format came on January the 2nd, 2006. Who was the player? Well, I mean, back up. Okay. I'll tell you the team. Mm-hmm. It was the Killer Car Company. They held the first overall pick in the 2006 reorganization draft that we held when we restructured the league initially. 2006, held by Johnny and his Killer Cars. Who was the player?
And so this was the catch-all. This wasn't a prospect draft.
This is catch-all. This is like starting a league from scratch.
Okay. I'm trying to think back 20 years. I'm thinking it'll probably be like guy. My first two thoughts were Pujols or Cabrera. I'll go Pujols.
Sir, you are correct. It was Albert Pujols.
Very impressive.
Very impressive.
I'm so smart. I'm a smart boy. Yes, I am. I remember because when I joined the league, Pujols was on his team. So in my head, I was thinking, okay, probably guy is out forever. So.
Yeah, Pujols was the he really was the linchpin, the glue of those early Killer Cars teams, along with Chase Utley, I think back then.
I think Jimmy Rollins was on those teams. If I remember
he was Tim Lincecum. Was on
Timmy.
Was
on I remember you loved Timmy. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. Johnny had a good. He had a great core back
he
then.
Did. He really did. What happened, he man? Sure. What happened to that? Man. Man, things have changed a little bit.
We'll let it go for there, guys. That is it for today's show.
People are very happy that we're done.
It's been.
You know what's funny, Scotty? If you're a team that I didn't insult over the show, this is like, good. Just shut him up now. He hasn't ripped on my team. I'm very happy about that. Like, Zach is like, what the hell? These guys went an hour and a half. And didn't take a single shot. This has got to be a record for us. We went 94 minutes and didn't rip on them once, right?
Listen, we have a season preview show.
We do. Oh, we'll rip them apart there. Zach's, I'm just saying.
Zach,
Zach's going to get his. Don't worry about that.
I'm just saying, this for us is a record. To go 94 minutes without one shot at the chicks. I'm very proud of us, Scotty. I'm very proud.
I mean, we could, you know, we could just start taking shots at the chicks.
No, let's not do that. Let's say, you know what? So if he ever comes back to us and says, all you guys do is rip on me, we could say, like, there was a whole episode where we didn't say a bad thing about your team. So let's do that.
Agreed. Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure as always. I will see you next time here on the K&M Super Show, brought to you by BDL, by the BDL Podcast Network. Hopefully we weren't too rusty here today, guys. I think we had a pretty good show, a lot of good chatter. But, Mike, that's all for now. We will see you next time. And
I forgot what my closing line was. Whatever it was. Good night, everybody.